mean, I don't. I think today, Sunday, you listen to this song and it's like, you know what? I think this song is about Manny Pacquiao. This guy been in the game 2 decades, going strong, 40 years old, and he beats Keith Thurman. I got how many guys we got here? I got a handful of guys here. I lost count. I got Fred here. I got Lex. I got Leo. Leo was in the building last night. So we got to discuss. We got to break down the fight. But we got, you know, this is the normal, regularly scheduled episode. So we're going to go over all of boxing on this episode. But we are going to touch back. If you didn't listen to our post-fight pod, you want a long, deep dive on Manny Pacquiao versus Keith Thurman. From every single angle, go back and listen to the episode that we just did last night. This is more general. We're not going to spend too much time on Pacquiao Thurman. You know, like The Athletic's first episode of their podcast where they spend literally less than 13 minutes talking about the fight in their preview podcast, but whatever. So, Leo, Fred, Lex, nice to have you on here with me. Let's start with Leo. Leo, you were in the building, okay? This was your first Pacquiao fight, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's the first time I've seen him live.
What was it like? For all the people out there that either A, will never get a chance to see Manny Pacquiao, or B, just chose not to go see Manny Pacquiao fight, what was it like?
So there's a really that Pacquiao winds up in a tier that of all the fighters that I've seen live, the only others that are in the same tier of buzz, electricity in the arena, it's Canelo and Mayweather. There's nobody else that I've seen personally that compares to what I experienced on Saturday.
How was it like when, like, so we were both there for Santa Cruz and Frampton, and that was the rematch in Vegas, and it was in the same venue, and it was an amazing atmosphere, especially
That's
because
right.
the crowd was split. Now, you were at a fight where the crowd was not split at all.
Definitely not.
I mean, what was it like for you watching it and, like, the crowd is going nuts and, you know, I'm assuming that you have the wherewithal to, you know, not give Manny credit for punches that aren't necessarily always landing. But what was it like for you sitting there, like, do you think the crowd influenced how you perceived the fight?
To be a total hipster about it, I'm going to say no. Not only to keep the arena noise from influencing the way that I see things, I started wearing earplugs also to protect my ears.
Wow.
Hey, I'm an old man these days, all right? I got to do what I got to do.
Wow.
But being in there, it was obvious to me that the knockdown in the first round, it was a flash knockdown. I was hearing that he might have had his foot stepped on or that he was tripped up somehow. He got up and Thurman was obviously not hurt, but everybody was going just absolutely insane, like bloodlust, you know what I mean? And so hearing that, that kind of set the stage for what to expect. And it played itself out over and over throughout the fight where Pacquiao would lack, from my perspective, what looked like punches on the guard, just off the gloves, but everyone's just going insane, thinking that Manny's just running away with it.
And that was obviously not the case.
Yeah.
Where do you rank it in terms of like fights that you've been to, like in terms of like just the atmosphere and stuff? Where do you rank it?
Top three. Maymac was, even though that it wasn't sold out and there was an entire section that was empty. I would put it above Maymac. Canelo Triple G2 might be number one, and LSC Frampton 2 is another top one.
Okay. Did you talk to any, let's say, I'm pretty sure there were a lot of Filipino fans there. How'd they feel after the fight?
I didn't speak to them directly, but I was just kind of walking around the crowd as everybody was leaving, as everyone was egressing from the event. I was kind of walking around, stopping and listening to people. And for the Sunday Puncher guys that we chat on Instagram, we have a little mini Jeff Mayweather fan club there. So I kind of posted up near his, where he was, and listening to him. He was asking the crowd the same thing, and he was getting a lot of reactions, you know, obviously being a Mayweather. But a lot of people were really upset with the possibility that you could even suggest that Thurman was close with, you know, their hero.
All right, now let's get into this. So, Lex, you weren't on last night like Leo, and so you're watching the fight, and I'm sure you, I'm pretty sure before the fight when I spoke to you, you picked Thurman. So, in your mind, you're watching the fight, it's slipping away. What was your justification or the reason why, in your opinion, you saw Thurman lose that fight?
You know, I'd say that of all the boxing that I've watched in my entire life, I've never seen a fight where one fighter's confidence so greatly dictated the outcome. Because, you know, coming into the ring, Keith looked pretty confident. He talked a whole bunch of trash the entire buildup. And the second he got knocked down, everything changed. It took him, in my opinion, about four or five rounds to get his confidence back. And we saw it in the middle rounds. He started to have a little comeback. And then Pacquiao landed that body shot. And again, it just changed everything. And I think, you know, I didn't think it was close. I know a lot of people thought maybe a draw. I didn't see that. I thought Pac-Man won comfortably.
So. Ooh, I didn't think you were going to say that. You know, Fred and I talked last night about the scoring, and I think we were both in agreement. I had it 114-113 for Pacquiao. I thought both guys clearly won six rounds. So, like, you know, we are 24 hours after the fight, and Pacquiao, he's won a decision. We've all had time to think about it. We, you know, it's a day later, so the adrenaline should not be pumping anymore. So, Fred, what do you think was the story of the fight? And I'm going to ask each of you guys this. But what do you think was the story of the fight? What is the big takeaway?
The big takeaway is that, once again, it was up to Floyd Mayweather to Filipino Tiger out and to show the world that he's still here. And Floyd Mayweather, they took Manny off the scrap heap.
Are you saying that he let him out of his cage, maybe?
Yes. He was not even out of the cage. Because you could see Bob Arum himself said last fall for Manny Pacquiao when he signed with Al Heyman. And yet today, across the Twitter sphere, jabronis talking about how they didn't mention Crawford. It's like, well, if you had Crawford last fall, why would you let Manny Pacquiao go? They thought he's done. They thought he's garbage. They thought he's finished. And here it is. Take away that 25% cut the promoters take, and, you know, that Michael Conch, you know, life force, he was sucking out of Manny. Back-to-back pay-per-views, he's back on top of the world. Boxing forums are being swarmed. Everywhere you go. It's a last gasp. Most fighters never go out like this. Up, and now they're giving Manny a chance to go out on top again.
That was beautiful.
Moves.
Well Heyman. Done channeling Max Kellerman there. Actually, I don't know if I interrupted you. You paused so much, you actually might have been channeling Larry Merchant instead of Max Kellerman.
Yeah, I'm almost as drunk as Larry Merchant.
Do you ever watch like an HBO card and like Merchant was pausing so much that you thought he was like having a medical emergency?
Almost said, well, when it got near the end, yeah, Merchant was starting to, is he still alive? They had to check him. So.
Yeah, I had many moments where I'm like, is he okay?
Merchant knew the dramatic pause.
Leo, what's your story of the fight?
Story of the fight for me is that, this runs contrary to what a lot of the crowd there was thinking. And yes, Pacquiao obviously still does have it, but I'd like to put a little credit into a little bit of victory and defeat kind of situation towards Thurman, where Pacquiao won. Yes, nobody's denying that. No one's denying that he beat him. But Thurman was very competitive, and to say that his first loss came to a legend, that's nothing to be ashamed of. Thurman went out there, and despite the flash knockdown in the beginning, it took him a few rounds, but he ended up, he got his pace back. And like you said, on the immediate reaction pod, he started running away with it in the middle. And I saw it the exact same way. The middle rounds, Thurman really turned something on, and he had made great adjustments. And then he got tagged, I think it was in the 10th, to the body, and he was a bit woozy. And so those last rounds, like, you know, one punch changed it, but Thurman was in that fight, absolutely. And that, so to me, that's the story of it, is that Thurman is a legitimate, he's a legitimate one, welterweight, definitely belongs in the elite.
What about you, Lex?
Yeah, I'm glad you tagged me in, because, you know, I was going to say, if they immediately ran that fight back, I'd pick Thurman. I think in spots, he did exactly what was necessary to win. He just couldn't sustain it because he didn't have the confidence to be bold. And, like, the unique thing about that fight, in addition to what I said earlier, is a Manny won it, to me, based on his experience. He did so many little tricks that will appeal to the judges, I thought. Like, there are a lot, because, like, you said you had it almost a draw, and I could see that. But, like, what I thought was the difference was a lot of the stuff Manny was doing gave off superior body language. To me, from a judge's perspective, you see that, and it's like, this guy's totally in control. He has that round. Manny might do a little scrappy thing at the end of the round, like swing the card. He'd do the little Ali shuffle. He was just doing all this clever little stuff to make it seem like he was super active, super aggressive, super in control. And I think that's where he edged Keith. Not skill-wise or power or anything.
I think that's pretty accurate to say. Like, I really think that Manny, like, in terms of damage received over the course of the fight, like, who would you say, like, they got hit with the hardest punches in the fight? Like, it would anyone here make the case that it was Pacquiao who hit Thurman with the hardest punches in the fight? Obviously, if you look at Thurman's face at the end, you know, it looks like it was him who got hit the most, but really... Is anyone going to make that case here that Thurman took the more punishment?
Listen, of all the punches landed, I thought Pacquiao was going to go down several times. I didn't see any punches really where I was like, oh my God, Thurman's in big danger. Pacquiao was getting those, but he never went down. He would just smack his fist together, do a little head shake, and go right back at Thurman. And again, that's the experience. I'm sure he was hurt, but he did a way better job of hiding it.
Leo, Fred? You guys want to make a case? I agree with that.
To me, it looked a lot like Pacquiao was winning. The rounds that he was winning, it wasn't. It was more that Thurman wasn't doing what he could have to prevent that. Like, I think you said it, that he was stealing rounds. Like, he wasn't as active in the beginning, and then he would do just enough at the end to make sure that if you're keeping score, make sure that the last thing you remember about that round is that he threw some combinations. And they didn't necessarily they weren't all scoring punches, but they're punches nonetheless. So I would say Thurman threw the more singularly effective shots, but Pacquiao threw more.
I mean, I think it was clearly Manny Pacquiao who received the most damage in that fight, like, without a doubt. I think there were moments where Pacquiao, here's the thing, Pacquiao's got a great chin and a great poker face, but there were times in that fight where it looked like Manny, like, got hit with there's guys who get hit with clean shots, and Canelo's a really good example of this. He got hit with some really clean shots in his fight with Golovkin, but it didn't move him, it didn't make him drop his hands. You know, you see this, like, Thurman got hit with shots and it made him drop his hands. Pacquiao's gonna get hit and he's not dropping his hands. But he did look like, or sorry, Pacquiao in the past has been hit and he doesn't drop his hands. But in this fight, it looked like he got hit sometimes and his hands just kind of dropped and he would look like kind of helpless for a few seconds, or probably it was actually like a fraction of a second, really. But, you know, this is boxing and these guys are moving so fast and all this stuff. Like, it looked like Pacquiao was, the punches were affecting him in a way we haven't seen punches affect Pacquiao before, who's been able to walk through everything. And he does his customary punch himself in the face with both gloves or put his hands up and then keep marching forward. So, I mean, I don't think that there's any case that Keith Thurman landed the harder shots. What do you think, Fred?
Poker face is the biggest thing. Like, if you look at the first five rounds, Manny bloodied his nose if he didn't break it. And Thurman coming back to the corner looked absolutely dejected. You know, and that's where Manny, when he's like, you know, Manny's like, we even was getting caught. The biggest thing that Manny had, like, he was getting caught clean, but he wasn't walking forward. And that's where it really gets dangerous. Like, when your momentum's bringing you forward and the guy stops you, but he was getting tagged, but he wasn't walking into him. you know, like I said, the obvious, the most famous is when he walked into, you know, Marquez's punch. So it sort of saved him, but
he didn't quite walk into that. He jumped into it.
But that's what I'm saying. Like the forward momentum, when you get tagged, when you're coming that forward. But when he was getting tagged by Thurman, he was more stationary. But Thurman was basically telling everyone that Manny was winning that fight in the first half.
Yeah, I think
that's where he was doing good. He was walking back, and his face is bloodied, and his head was hanging low, and everything is like that's what a veteran fighter does. Veteran fighter doesn't show.
He looked overcome by the moment. Like, you know, if you follow the NFL or something, you see like, oh, you know, these guys, this team was unprepared. They were inexperienced. They looked like a deer in the headlights in a playoff game. And I think that's what Keith Thurman looked like. He looked like a deer in the headlights for much of that fight. And then in the fifth round, when things started to turn around, you saw the Keith Thurman that we all know. We saw the Keith Thurman that we thought we were going to see, like the super confident Keith Thurman. I mean, he came out that way. I think Thurman came out really confident. But Pacquiao pulled a Floyd. What Floyd did to him, I think, Fred, you and I have talked about this a lot, where Pacquiao lost the fight with Floyd in the first round. Floyd hit him with a couple of body shots, hit him with a straight right hand, and that was it. Pacquiao was like, oh, I can't do anything. I can't do the normal stuff that I do because this guy is just like, if this is what he's got. And I think Pacquiao did that to Thurman.
Yeah, the entire game plan in that Mayweather-Pacquiao fight was that they thought Floyd would be perfectly defensive. And when Floyd came right out and said, here I am, and here's the shots, this is what I can hurt you with, it stuck in Manny's mind. And it threw him and Freddie for a loop. And even Freddie talked about that. They thought he was going to lay back and just be defensive and wait. And when you throw that, you know, the same thing with like Manny did in this fight. He's like, and this is what Manny loves doing. You know, this is his biggest trap ever. He lets a guy come at you. And then as soon as the fighter resets, Manny follows you back. Like if you picture a tide coming in and out, you know, when the tide comes out, man, he's coming right back at you. And that's what he likes to do. And Liam Floyd talked about that. He goes, that's a trap I'm never going to fall into. And we saw at the start, that's what Thurman completely fell into.
Yeah.
This guy can't do it. And that's a trap that a veteran fighter like Manny has. You
know? Yeah.
Manny has so many tricks, and that's a thing. And he busts them all out for this fight.
So where do you go now with Manny Pacquiao? He's got one fight left on his deal. Who knows if he'll renew it? Maybe he won't even fight past this one fight. Where do you go now? Lex, Leo, you guys got any idea?
I'd like to say where he goes from now, or what I'd like to see him do now. The same thing that I said and was saying to the people that were in the media section with me is that pass the torch. I mean, what more is there for him to prove? Does win or lose, if he fights Spence, the physical cost that he's going to have to pay for that fight is, it's just not worth it. What more is there left for Manny to prove? What, at best, the best case scenario, Floyd Mayweather comes out of retirement and they make another bajillion dollars fighting each other. And that's really it. Otherwise, what's really the point? I don't need any more proof that Manny Pacquiao's a shoe-in for the Hall of Fame or anything like that.
Yeah, no, his position was solidified the moment he beat Marco Antonio Barrera. The bar for entry in the Boxing Hall of Fame is disgustingly low. What do you think, Lex?
Well, I mean, in typical PBC fashion, it sounds like their guys always get three choices, right? So I'd imagine his key.
Closer to the mic.
Can you hear me okay?
It sounds like you're a little far.
I'd imagine that Manny Pacquiao will get three choices. It'll be Errol Spence, Mikey Garcia, and Danny Garcia. I think with the momentum that he has, picking Mikey will be a wise decision. He'll make a lot of money, and you can have a huge, like, you know, Mikey brings a Mexican fan base, so a huge pay-per-view. The only question is, what's the status of Mikey and DAZN? Because I've heard he may be negotiating to go there. Who knows?
Well, we'll talk about that potential disaster in a little bit later on when we specifically talk about that. I have a hot take for you guys. Are you ready?
Let's go. Fire away.
So now maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I'm falling into a trap. Or maybe I'm just trying to provide the other side of the argument. It's up to you to decide what I'm doing here. But let me say something. I think the next move – should be Spence. And I'm confident that you guys are all wrong when you say there's a physical toll that Manny Pacquiao is going to pay in that fight. I don't think so. I do not think so whatsoever. I think that if Manny Pacquiao fought Spence, he actually has a shot at winning the fight. I think that Spence, what we've seen from Spence is he's not Sergey Kovalev fighting low-level opposition on HBO. Errol Spence is a guy that does not think of himself that way. He doesn't think he's Gennady Golovkin. He thinks that I'm physically strong and I can box. Guys won't stand up to me for very long because of that combination. But in the event that they can stand up to the power, they won't lose because I'll outbox them. And Spence isn't stupid. He's not going to go into a fight and be reckless by trying to bully a guy. Because if he was going to do that, wouldn't he have done it against Mikey? You have a guy moving up from lightweight, fighting you at 147. He's clearly smaller. He doesn't look like he's in amazing shape. Errol Spence is one of the bigger welterweights. Like, you would think that if Errol was going to fight in that stalking, I'm going to just beat you down and stop you as quick as I can. If he was going to do that, wasn't that the perfect opportunity? So what's going to change when he goes from fighting a lightweight, a natural lightweight in Mikey Garcia, to a guy who, yes, he has fought at lightweight, but has fought almost a decade now at welterweight? A natural welterweight who's still very, very fast. That he's lost zero speed over his hand speed over the past, you know, 8 or 9 years. What's to say that Spence, maybe he beats Pacquiao? Probably he does. But Pacquiao's not, like, I don't think Pacquiao looks at this fight like it's not winnable. This isn't like Pacquiao looking at, say, fighting Andre Ward and saying, like, yeah, I have no shot at winning this fight. I think that this could be a winnable fight, and it would be the biggest fight to make. What do you guys think? Am I crazy? Do you want to provide an alternative here?
No, that's the fight I think that should be made, like, after this, if Spence gets by Porter, which he should. And I know, like I said, other people are saying, oh, Mikey Garcia, Mikey Garcia. Like, yeah, Mikey's got to recover himself a bit. Yeah, sure, he can sell it a bit. And, you know, well, he's taking a shot, but all the momentum and the run is, I think, better for Spence and Pacquiao. And like I said before, it's like Spence is not going to try to go in there and blow him out. The fight last night, he knows that he's got to fight smart. Spence isn't going to buckle in the after the Thurman buckled. You know?
After a body shot?
Spence is very smart. He's an extremely smart fighter that people haven't given credit for.
Spence might be one of the most underrated, tactically, like, fundamentally sound boxers in the sport.
Like, he can roll with everything. You look at the Brook fight, he rolled with that back and forth. You know, Brook's trying to mug him, and he's not. He flowed with it. He even broke the guy's face. You know, everything. Spence is a lot smarter than people want to give him credit for. You know, they think he's just some, you know, puncher. He's not. Not at all. He's the truth, baby.
Yeah.
They don't like him because he might not be well-spoken enough?
Yeah, the well-spoken angle.
Listen, there's only one well-spoken guy we're talking about today, and that's Keith Thurman. Shout out Reddit comments. Lex, what do you think? You're the one that said that, Leo, you said the physical harm, but let's see what Lex has to say, because I feel like you're going to take some issue with what I said.
No, what you said makes perfect sense. I mean, like, I made the mistake before the fight looking at Pacquiao like a 40-year-old, and sure, he is 40, but he doesn't perform like a 40-year-old. I don't think Errol will just be able to walk Pac-Man down. I don't think there's a 47 that could completely just blow Pacquiao out. I think Errol would win the fight, but I don't think he would just, like, behead Pacquiao. I think it'd be – what you said makes perfect sense.
Well, if you're going to, like, stop Pacquiao, you will have to behead him. I don't think anyone's going to hurt him and then do an accumulation stoppage on him. I just don't, like, Pacquiao recovers really quickly. He's fast on his feet, so good luck trapping him. He's spent, 15 years now hearing Freddie Roach yell at him about being on the ropes, and he did a really good job against Thurman by not being on the ropes. I mean, there were a few times that I could remember, but those might be literally the only times in the fight he was on the ropes. because I think Pacquiao's pretty terrible when he's in that position. And, you know, being a smaller guy, he's opening himself up. But So for those of you out there who are upset with PBC for not putting Terrence Crawford on a graphic that, by the way, they weren't showing the welterweight champions. They were showing the welterweight champions in fights coming up on their network, which is, you know, it makes sense. They got a little, perhaps a little tournament going on here. But I'll say this. I love Terrence Crawford. You guys know that. But same thing goes for Crawford. I don't think Pacquiao blows him out. I don't think Crawford blows out Pacquiao. I think what Crawford's weakness is guys with speed. You saw Gamboa really trouble Crawford. Well, the fastest guy at 147, I'm pretty sure he's going to give Terrence Crawford a little bit of trouble. Now, again, I pick Terrence Crawford, but you know what? I also pick Keith Thurman, and I would also pick Errol Spence. And there's a possibility that Manny Pacquiao could beat and has beaten at least one of them, but he could beat all of them. So I don't think it's that crazy.
Fake outrage. And that's the stupidest shit I've ever saw about this whole...
What do you mean?
Everyone's defending Crawford's out. Everyone's defending Crawford's honor.
Oh, my God. Just address Jermell Herring by his name.
Is it Jermell Herring?
Jermell Herring's the one that really got this started.
Yeah, suddenly Jermell Herring's bitching at Oscar De La Hoya over middleweight fights. God, guys, log in and log back out. It's not that tough to do. I don't think Jermell Herring got that excited about the politics and boxing that he's tweeting at everyone.
I'm sure you've seen it, Leo, but you obviously weren't watching last night on TV. They did a graphic that showed they said welterweight champions or whatever, and it had Spence, Porter, Manny, and of course Thurman. And there's all this outrage, like, oh my god, Mark Kriegel had this really just melodramatic, same thing like his stupid profiles that he does. This melodramatic tweet about how, you know, they could boxers risk their lives in the ring. Someone pull it up so I can quote him wrong. But he says something like, boxers risk their lives in the ring, blah, blah, blah. And look how it's dangerous when they can easily just disappear someone. Like the Fox broadcast is the CIA or something.
Oh, my goodness. That's ridiculous. I'm honestly gonna. This might be a hot take. I think that WBO stands for Worthless Belt Organization. That one's the least of all the major titles. It is the least valuable. IBO. Say what you want about it. At least like their rankings are consistent. The way that you climb the ladder of the IBO is consistent. So WBO with Bob only, Warren's boxers only. Let's not kid ourselves. Yeah. Is Terrence Crawford fan? He's number one, number two, no particular order. He's at the top two of 147 and of the world. It's not a question. But let's not pretend that he has the strongest resume or that he has the strongest possible opponents lined up for him now that he's locked in with Top Rank for the foreseeable future.
He said, each broadcast has its built-in bias. This is something different. This is a special insult to the fighters themselves. Fighters risk their lives. And if a guy who fights as well as anyone in the world can be made to disappear, then so can the rest of you. Lex, your thoughts?
I'm completely sick of everybody acting. All these network and brands play together. They don't. DAZN rarely has guys come over. Top Rank, PBC, and not to say it never happens, but it's not a fight. PBC, same thing. ESPN and Top Rank, same thing. I don't understand why we hold everyone to different standards. It's completely stupid and outrageous.
You mean to say that it's not the boxing media industrial complex with some vendetta against Terrence Crawford?
Kriegel's talking like it's like the Nazi party. He's like wiping out the fighter.
He's seriously acting like this is some kind of global conspiracy to keep Terrence Crawford out of the public consciousness. Like, no, Terrence Crawford did that to himself by re-signing his deal.
Right, and that's what's so frustrating about this. We've seen it time and time again with all these different Top Rank fighters. They leave and great things happen. Pacquiao and Mikey Garcia. And I'm not even specifically saying that guys have to go to PBC. I like PBC for my own reasons, but once Oscar De La Hoya and Floyd are two other goodies. Terrence Crawford made to stay inside of the ESPN top rank gate. And he is stuck with that decision. No PBC flowchart is going to change that. It doesn't matter. He is, until that contract is over, he is not fighting. He won not with ESPN. Get over it, everybody. It is what it is.
And it's not Al Heyman's fault either.
What do you guys think of Ryan Garcia being at the fight last night?
I didn't see anyone care.
Okay,
that was Manny's night.
Let's move on. Jordynnis Ugas, he really just beat the hell out of Omar Figueroa for 12 rounds. He couldn't stop him. Where do you guys put Ugas at 147 now, Lex?
I don't have a particular number for Ugas, but I really like the momentum he's built because he's like a perfect, like, he's a perfect opponent. Now, if you don't take him seriously, have an off night, he will beat you. And this is like speaking for the top guys, Errol, Keith, Sean already beat him barely, Danny Garcia. If you have an off night against you guys, he has enough talent to beat you. But with that said, that tier of guys should win. So you guys is like knocking on the door. I love that he's where he's at. He's going to be in some good fights.
Well,
and like, in my opinion, like, I thought his fight was, you know, compared to most Cuban boxers, was pretty decent in terms of excitement.
Well, I mean, that narrative is shifting in 2019 with Lara and Brigando suddenly discovering Mexican style.
Yeah, you want to talk about Al Heyman doing something for boxing. Man, he changed he redefined Cuban style. He's got these guys fighting toe-to-toe, and it is something else.
Okay, so you said something. I think you might have misspoke, but maybe you didn't. But I'll open this up to everyone. Like, do you think Jordynnis Ugas could beat Keith Thurman? Like the Thurman you saw last night, do you think that he beats Ugas?
The Thurman we saw last night beats Ugas, but the Thurman against Jose Cito Lopez would have lost.
What do you think, Fred?
I really liked Ugas, and when people said, oh, this Porter Ugas fight was like once again another PBC showcase, I thought they were dumb as hell, and these fucking writers don't know what they're talking about. I didn't like how Ugas fought last night at all.
Really?
I thought his holding was ridiculous, and people were trying to defend his holding. He was trying to do slick holding. Forearm?
But pinning he down stuck hands, his arm. Right?
Yeah, he stuck his arm in there to hold, because that's all Figueroa wants to do is to put his head against your shoulder and just pound away.
Yes.
And Ugas is pushing, he's holding. He wanted that range because that's where he could dominate him. He didn't want to fight inside. So when you talk about Keith Thurman, I think Keith Thurman might be a bit too slick for Ugas. And I like Ugas. Like I said, I liked Ugas going to that Porter fight. And I still think he probably might have grabbed that fight. I didn't like the way he fought last night. I thought he was fighting fighting like a bitch or something. It was way too much holding, and he should have had more points off him.
It was pretty rough to watch.
And he could have stopped Figueroa. Like, if he would have poured it on, the ref would have stepped in, and people are bitching, why doesn't the ref do this? That's because Ugas wasn't doing enough to make the ref come in and step in. Because you're not going to stop.
That was my biggest takeaway from it, actually, was why isn't Ugas doing – how has he not ended this? He's very clearly in control of the fight. In every facet of the fight, he was controlling distance. He was controlling Figueroa with his body because he's obviously bigger. He's in total control. Why? How is that fight not ended? By what, round 7, 8?
Yeah, because even that's looking for
a bit long.
Because otherwise, Figueroa can eat punches all day long. You can't, unless you pour it on him and like try to make a big combo finish out of it. He'll just stand there in front of you, and you can hit him as much as you want, and he'll still be there.
So does that show that what Ugas doesn't have the power to check out a lightweight?
No, I think he just needed to close. He didn't want to close it. I think they had a game plan to fight Figueroa, and he didn't want to get off it, and he didn't want to get in a position where he might get tagged with something, which Figueroa probably isn't going to tag him with. Figueroa's just volume. He tries to score and throw like 1,000 punches on normal guys. A game plan, and they didn't want to get off it. So like I said, I like Ugas. I think he's great, and I think he's right up there. But I just didn't like the way he fought last night.
I think that, see, I think I want to say that Ugas would beat Thurman. And like the thing about Ugas is like he's really good at basically everything. There's really no flaws with Ugas in terms of like massive flaws where you're like, oh, that's easily exploitable, except maybe for the fact that he doesn't appear to have like that next gear. You know, that's why he's not a world champion. That's why he didn't beat Sean Porter, is because he just doesn't quite have that gear to go to. The gear that Thurman went to and Pacquiao went to last night. And then I think if you look at Thurman's performance from last night, it definitely looked like it was lacking. And you can easily get caught up in that mindset, like that Thurman didn't look good last night, so therefore he must not be good. And that is such a backwards way of thinking, and it's just really a toxic way of thinking, because just because you lose to one guy does not say much about your career, unless that guy is just really, like, he's not good. You know, obviously, if at any point in your career now you lose to Alberto Machado, you're probably not a good fighter. But losing to Pacquiao, and the Pacquiao we saw last night, based off of that performance, and losing a close fight, okay, Thurman's not as good as Errol Spence. He's not a top guy. However, he's still, I think, an elite welterweight. And I think that if he were to fight Ugas, if Ugas can't get Thurman's respect, I think Thurman would control the fight and win it pretty easily. Now, Ugas is still very good. I think that it would also be a close fight, though, and there's no way for you to just say, oh, well, that was a ridiculous, you know, call.
It's not going to be a wash. He wouldn't just sweep the floor with him.
No. And Thurman's obviously not going to walk into a fight with Ugas and just get smoked. You know, I just don't see that happening. Moving on to the undercard. I don't think there's much to talk about with the Lipinets and Neary fight. Although, I think, Fred, you have something to say about the Lipinets fight.
I kind of said that last night, didn't I?
I don't know. I don't remember, dude. It was like 2 a.m.
All right. So maybe you guys can help me out with this one. I haven't seen any replays of Lipinets insole, right?
Yes.
Okay, so I haven't seen any replays of that. All I saw was him go down, and it was a good counter. And what I saw was he went down. Kind of, he looks like he landed kind of hard, but it seemed like he started picking himself up almost immediately, and it was waved off. Pretty much, I felt it was way too soon. Maybe you guys can give me a little breakdown. It looked, because even the crowd around me was saying that it was waved off.
The fight was the guy was like a late minute replacement because you know, Molina got injured.
Right.
Everyone knew J-80s, like, he's been around boxing forever. He knows this guy is like he's not on Lipinets' level, and Lipinets can hurt people. So he hit this guy, and that dude was like face planting. So then he comes up, and Nady's the guy looking in his eyes. It doesn't matter what a boxer says, because they're all trained to say, yeah, I'm okay, I can go.
Oh, no, I'm not talking about Mancini. That's just natural. Like, fuck Mancini.
No, I'm saying Nady.
Okay.
People were bitching about Nady stopping. Mancini didn't. He wasn't working the call. You know, Goose and those guys, they didn't. They thought it was fine.
Okay.
They all trust, well, because Goosen's in the corner, and that was the funniest thing is Nady was telling him to shut up because you can't coach, you know, from the corner. That's technically a foul, even though they usually don't call people on it. But Nady was like telling Joe to shut up, and then they're laughing about it afterwards because that's just part of boxing.
Yeah.
Because they had Goosen mic'd up because he gets his mic and they're like showing him backstage and everything.
All right. So, okay. So it looked like it was early fight, from my perspective, but.
He had no business being in the ring with Lipinets, and J-80 knew that. He's like, why are you gonna, like, he's not gonna let this guy get pounded again.
Right. So he got
Lipinets cranked him.
Oh hell yeah, he did.
I'm like, Lipinets hit him. He's like, why are you gonna put the guy out there? Like, that's it. You know, the fight doesn't need to continue.
It's just gonna be more of this.
Exactly, and Nady knows that. Like, the fight only happened because Lipinets saved his spot in the card.
Yeah,
they brought this guy up who was like just a dude from the Philippines or whatever. One of Manny's,
he was supposed to fight on the undercard,
right? So they pulled him off, pulled him up.
Yeah, he was already fighting somebody, and then they said no.
Is he a Manny Pacquiao promotions fighter?
I believe. JR was.
JR.
Yeah, right, so Nate's cool. Like, no, he says, okay, you had your shot and you got hammered. It's like he doesn't need to see Lipinets beat this guy into the ground again.
Well, you also didn't need to see the fight continue to know what was about to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like Lipinets throws hard punches. He's, you know, especially with Goosen in his corner, you know, that's the kind of style they throw. They're go out there and take people's heads off.
Hold up, tinfoil time. Is Lipinets a snack fighter?
No, but Caleb
I got conspiratorially close to the microphone to say that.
Caleb Plant is.
Ooh. Segue.
So is Mikey drop? Garcia.
Don't do that. Right. I like him. We're allowed to talk smack about the guys I don't like. Or have
really,
no
that's what it comes down to in boxing. Is like you can only say the bad things about the guys I don't like. Not the guys I do like.
That snack shit ain't even spelt right.
Caleb Plant.
Just like Teddy said, the reason Pacquiao looked good is because he's juicing.
Yeah, but I didn't see snack on his trunks, so I don't have to believe there. Anyway, Caleb Plant, he came out. He wanted to make a statement. I think he did. Mike Lee really looked bad. Like, he looked like a guy who had no business being in the ring with a world-level elite fighter. He looked like a solid fighter, but like when those solid fighters get in the ring with elite guys, we start to separate the boys from the men. And Mike Lee, good thing he has a college degree from Notre Dame, because he's not going to be a world champion. Let me ask you guys this, okay? We got a lot of guys at 168. Is Caleb Plant the best based off of what you've seen from him in the past year? What do you think, Lex?
So close. Listen, I'm biased for this. I'm a huge fan, but I'm a huge fan too. So I think that I just want both of these guys to stay undefeated so we could get a LA super fight and let the best man win. Cause I slept on Plant against Uzkadagi big time. I thought Uzi would overpower him with all that energy that he has, but Plant did it. Benavidez is like a dog. I love his attitude. I mean, I call him El Chapo. He's an animal.
Benavidez, that is definitely El Chapo.
Yeah, that's a topical nickname.
He likes to party.
He likes to party. He walks around with his shirt buttoned down so he can show his taco meat. He wears like seven chains everywhere he goes. That's El Chapo, big time. But I mean, Plant may be able to take like it's. But for me, it's between those two.
What do you think, Leo?
Right now, I'd have to. It's tough. I'm also a Benavidez fan. He's from my city, so I gotta give him the ups every chance I get. Right now, I would go with Plant as being the favorite, being the better fighter, a little bit more proven. But heart says Benavidez, mind says Plant.
Fred, there's an elephant in the room here. Let's see if you'll address it.
No, I think, okay, so what you got on Fox, they're setting up a Benavidez Plant fight, but the sad thing is that there's so many useless Europeans floating at 168 that these two guys can't go beat them up, you know? So you're going to get on Fox, you're going to get two guys that are dogs, and like Plant, like he, even though it's Mike Lee, you could see the slickness out of Plant.
That crowd was surprisingly, and there was a lot of people there for Mike Lee. It was really surprising.
Hey,
well, you had fans.
More people for Mike Lee than Caleb Plant, actually.
Oh, I mean, for sure. People from Tennessee people ain't coming out.
People for Mike Lee more than Keith Thurman.
There were no people from Knoxville, Tennessee that were out there to watch Caleb Plant. I can guarantee that. I mean,
something else. Oh, continue.
So, no one's going to bring up Callum Smith? What's wrong with you
Callum
guys?
Who? Well, Callum, that was my point. Yeah. Is like I said, there's these 168 guys that are floating around. They're not going to get anywhere close. DAZN's not going to do a fight with Benavidez or with Plant. This is the exact same thing as with Crawford. Fox knows, okay, these are the fights we can make. We're not going to sit here and jerk you off. And like I said, this is what I like about the Fox guys. They treat the viewers like they're not retards. You know, they know everyone knows
2019,
about-
but continue.
Everyone knows about Terrence Crawford, you know, so they're not going to sit there and go, this guy won't fight nobody. Like, you know, everyone got mad when they said, oh, Shakur Stevens being ducked. Okay, name him. Name me one guy that turned on the Shakur Stevens fight. You know, Bob Arum's out there in the press He can name all these guys who turned down Terrence Crawford's fight, supposedly. Talked to Angel Garcia. We didn't talk to Al Haymon, but we talked to his trainer. You know, the guy.
And we offered him $250,000 to fight Terrence Crawford in Omaha.
Or like Eddie Hearn's like, well, I offered, you know, Adrian Broner $2.5 million when he's making $3.5 million. You know, so it's like you're lowballing these guys,
and then you drag them through the mud whenever they don't accept your bullshit.
Yeah. So when Fox, they're all promoting their own fights, same as, you know, Top Rank does. You know, they sit there and go, Spence has got to fight him. Well, they didn't say Pacquiao has to fight him. They didn't say Thurman has to fight him. They didn't say Porter has to fight him. Not Ugas. You know, there's a ton of welterweights out there. Like I said earlier, find Manny Pacquiao, and Bob Heyman said, well, yeah, that makes sense because we've got nothing for him. Come back 6 months later and say, oh, why aren't these welterweights fighting our guy when you had Manny Pacquiao?
Yep.
I had him fight Crawford, so we can get the fuck out of here with that.
Yeah, but that was Bob Arum saying, we have nothing for Pacquiao. Well,
and magically now he has fights lined up.
They talked about the Lomachenko fight. Oh, wouldn't it be something if Lomachenko went up and fought Pacquiao at some catchweight, or Terrence Crawford and Manny Pacquiao, and then, you know, Pacquiao dips out.
And I think Lomachenko running into this Pacquiao that just fought last night.
I mean, you know, I don't remember what I said back then, but don't go back and listen, because I think Manny Pacquiao anywhere close to 147 is going to knock out Lomachenko if they were to fight, which they're not. But look, they never were. I got to at least mention that Callum Smith right now, based off of like accomplishment, is the number one guy at 168. I think there's a case to be made both in terms of what he's actually accomplished in the ring and in terms of what he's done in the fights that he's had. Obviously, he still hasn't fought the best opposition, but George Groves is close to being the best win that Benavidez, Plant, and Callum Smith all have combined. Although I think
you sound like a Dillian White.
Oh, geez, brother, we're gonna get into Dillian White.
Carl Frosch beat George Groves twice.
Yeah, well, Carl Frosch is a pretty decent fighter, except for the fact that
But he's also old as hell.
Hey, man, look, what we've learned this year is don't be ageist. Shout out Manny Pacquiao, and don't body shame. Shout out Andy Ruiz Jr.
What did Liam Smith do against Canelo with their autism shirts?
Wow. Canelo, you do know that that's not his nickname, right?
Isn't it for his the Smith brothers? They all wear it for their sister or something?
I believe, yeah, it's a sister. Maybe a family member. I'm pretty sure.
One of his family members.
I don't care. Because no one who watches is that deep into boxing. You see a dude with autism written on the back of his shorts. They're like, what the fuck?
There was somebody else who recently had the autism on their chunks. It wasn't a British fighter either. We're like way off base. So anyway, let's move on to the Dillian White fight. I'm guessing that only two of us watched that fight, but I could be wrong.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I figured if you were in Vegas. And then, so Dillian White, he scored a 12-round decision over Oscar Rivas. If you're sitting there and you're saying, I didn't watch that fight, I don't have days in, or I wasn't at home, should I go watch this fight? Fred, what's the answer?
Oh, I thought Lex was the other guy he watched. No. Lex did. No, I watched that fight.
Wait, Lex, did you watch it?
Absolutely not.
Oh, my God.
I spent the whole day trolling UK fans, right?
So you spent a bunch of time trolling on the internet against UK fans and didn't actually watch the fight. You sound like a UK fan.
This is Dillian White. He did have a nice double jab, but the most hilarious thing, I'll compare it again to last night. So 12th round, Rivas again, because he dropped Dillian White once with an uppercut.
Wait a second, you did watch this fight because we talked about it, you liar.
No, I know, but I was just making a joke about, you know, because, you know, I know Lex didn't watch that. He's asking what Dillian White.
No, because I was legitimately like mounting some arguments, like some discussion in my head that could.
I threw a speedball at you. Come on.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about a speedball, because I definitely would have taken that. but you made a curveball.
So Dillian Whiteley, yeah, he had a nice double jab, but like I don't really. Eddie Hearn's built this guy up into like now he's the boogeyman of the division. And so Revis, what is he? He's a big muscle dude, and he waited. He got his one shot, and he needed to end that fight with that uppercut on it to end the fight. But then in the 12th, he gets White in. And suddenly the ref wants to talk to him about, like, I don't know, maybe what they're doing after the fight or something. You know,
it was egregious.
Where they're going, where the after party is or something. He takes, like, 10 seconds where he's sitting there twice in the 12th round. He took 10 seconds to sit there and talk to Oscar Reeves about low blows. It's like, really? Because usually a low blow is a simple hey, keep it up the gesture. But no, this ref is like sitting there. He's, I don't know, he wanted to go over Revis's like visa that application read him, or something.
He was like Chris Jericho with the list of holds that he knows.
yeah, exactly.
And like it was critical because Revis looked like he hurt White. White was on the ropes. And immediately Oscar Revis steps inside and the referee just like, nope, don't even think about that.
Yeah. Breaks him up. Pushes him back. Yeah. And they're talking to him and talking. And see, there's a difference because last night on the Discord, people are just tearing into the Las Vegas referees. I think it was the Ugas Figueroa card where he did at the point where like he kept warning Ugas for holding. But when he said, when he had to sit there and talk to these guys, he called time.
Correct.
He had to take more than a half second or 1 second to tell these guys to do something. He called time to talk to them. And other UK guys, he's sitting there, you know, whatever. He ate up 20 seconds. And that 12 last, you know, with, hey, the most famous fight ever, you know, who Cesar Chavez ended that fight with, you know, 1 second left. You know, Dillian White was, again, he was wobbly on the ropes, and this ref just steps in like, no, this isn't how it's supposed to go.
But, so, like, that's when it was at its worst, but, like, I noticed it earlier in the fight when the referee just kept stopping Revis from coming inside, and it reminded me a lot of the Joshua Parker fight where the referee was just unwilling to let these guys mix it up on the inside. It was just like, nope, not happening. And
yeah.
Like,
yeah, suddenly the guys who officiated Ricky Hatton's career have a problem with the guy holding and hitting or working the inside.
Well, here's the thing. Also, Oscar Revis dropped Dillian White. He probably won a few rounds. I'd say he won like 3 or 4 rounds in the fight. Also dropped him. So it was close. And I don't understand how people think like Dillian White deserves a title shot. Like, why? What is there an argument to be made why he deserves a title shot other than the fact that
he's been waiting 600 days? Haven't you heard what Eddie Hearn's
he
been
got
saying?
Smoked by Anthony Joshua. 600 he looked like days. A domestic fighter against Anthony Joshua,
but he fought Chisora or whatever his name was.
Chisora, Teixeira played first base for the Yankees.
Had David Price versus David Allen on the co-main event.
That. I don't know if you watched that fight. You guys didn't watch that fight. It was pretty bad. Dave Allen, whatever, he made David Price look like an elite boxer. Like David Price was in there like slipping punches and stuff. It was phenomenal to watch. Like and then also Dave Allen quit in the corner, and David Price like just runs to the center of the ring when they tell him like, hey, this is over. He quit, and he does the jack off motion. That was the, like, I am now officially a David Price fan. If he fought in America, I'm going to that fight.
He really went in there and he did the, like, the air stroke.
But not, like he didn't blast it on anyone. He just, like, just stood there just, like, just doing it. For a good, like, a cool couple of seconds. And then it looked like it set in on his head, like, oh, I probably shouldn't be doing this. My children are probably watching this. And he just stopped.
So the Smith brothers don't wear, their trunks are not for David Price?
Yeah, no.
So
he really has no awareness of what he's doing and what's appropriate to do where.
Wow.
No, like I said, Dillian White's a competent heavyweight. You know, he's obviously, you know, he's good.
Okay, good in the sense that Omar Figueroa is good.
Please, like he's a decent, he's a serviceable fighter. But this whole idea that, you know, yeah, they've been keeping him away from the top guys. You know, it's like, come on.
Wait, who's the serviceable guy that we're talking about?
Omar Figueroa, like, resort compared.
Figueroa is serviceable. in the same way that, well, that type of serviceability doesn't have a very long, it doesn't last very long. Like, I used to think John Molina was a serviceable guy.
And came sounded, back how many times? You get Molina in a fight, he could have, you know.
I don't know. I think he's knocking on the end of his career.
Well, he is. Yeah, well, obviously, his back is going out on him. Like, I think Dillian White's probably a bit above those guys. But oh, this whole thing about that he's like, you know, he's the champ that people won't want to face. It's like, come on. The guy, like, he could have fought of eliminators, you know, and he's taken other fights with other sanctioning bodies. That's what they do. They don't give a rat's ass. They're going to go with the guys who, like, actually respect the sanctioning body. Those games and all this nonsense. It's like, come on.
All right, let's move on. Is it clear that Deontay Wilder, Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua, Andy Ruiz, none of them have any trouble with Dillian White? I think it's pretty clear to me.
Yeah. I would put AJ at the bottom of that list.
Okay, but Joshua if also we already knocked out Dillian White.
Yeah, he already dropped us, Dillian but Dillian White.
Yeah, but he recovered pretty well. And let's be real here. Dillian White is not as good of a boxer as Andy Ruiz. And even if he did hurt Joshua, wouldn't be able to capitalize on it again.
All right. Fair point.
Anyway, Teofimo Lopez, he fought on Saturday night, Friday night against, someone didn't write his name right here. So I'm going to have to look at my calendar, which if you don't subscribe to, that is a very, very big error on your part. He fought against Masayoshi Nakatani. And so Lopez did not look that good. And the question is whether or not the Teofimo Lopez takeover, is it over before it even got started? Lex, what do you think?
I love Tio. I'm a huge Tio fan. And he's only 22, right?
Yeah, he's very young.
Right. 21 or 22?
21, I think, yeah.
Okay, so 21. It's incredibly hard for me to be critical on a fighter that's 21. I mean, this for him, I think, was a major step up. He fought a guy who was a lot taller than him. And his opponent was very credible. Again, I don't remember his name off the top. It was tricky for me to say. But that guy was not there to lay down or get knocked out. He put up a very good fight, seemed pretty competent. He's obviously not the level of Lomachenko, but like that guy was decent. So I think overhyped calls are very premature. You know, I think he just had a tough night, and you move on. You got the W. Keep the hype train rolling.
What do you think, Leo?
I didn't see this fight, so I can't really say. If he had a bad night, that doesn't mean that the hype train's necessarily over. But, you know, you have to learn from it, grow from it. I think next fight, we'll see if the hype train is truly over. Because this would be one of those instances where if he had an off night on Friday, if his next opponent capitalizes on that and hands him a loss, now we're talking about somebody who might have been a bit more marketing than actual substance.
Fred, I think we're going to say the same thing. So what's your take here?
Take it over. Yeah, the whole thing is that they're trying to push him too fast, and that completely showed. You know, like the guy had, what, 9 fights in, and they're trying to set him up with fighting Loma? 21. You know, he needs more fights, and this one showed it. He's not ready. You can't rush these guys. And, you know, Tom talked about how ESPN, they want this UFC type of style where every fight has to be for a title. It's like, you can't do that. Like, they're trying to push this guy to Comey. You know, first it was Loma, but then Loma, while they're going, moving him to Luke Campbell, it's like, you can't. Like, he's 21. He only needs, like, maybe 3 more fights, I think, on this level. But this is what happens. Like, when a guy's knocking everyone out, it's sort of like the Effie Ajagba fight. Oh, he's the hype train. No, it's like, no, that's the exact type of fight he needs. You know, you need a fight where not everything goes your fighter's way. Boxing promoters, especially managers or even the matchmakers, this is what you want. You know, you season a guy right and he can give you a decade of great fights. Prospects fall off, you know, so you try to rush a guy and his whole entire career could just be derailed. you know. So I think they were pushing Teofimo way too fast to try to get this belt with Comey. But I guess now he's going to get his shot. But he's like, he did not look good at all. Because that's it. He's up against a guy who's just not falling over. Oh, really, what to do?
Yeah, I mean, think about it. This is his 14th professional fight. And I know there are guys who have come into boxing and achieved success very fast. They weren't 21 years old. And they, you know, Teofimo was an all right amateur, but he didn't have the kind of decoration that some of the, like a guy like Lomachenko had or Usyk. You know, Teofimo Lopez in his 14th fight, and you're 100% right, Fred, that he's got to have these kind of fights, and there's levels to it. It's like he's got to graduate each step of the game. Now, Naoya Inoue, who everyone loves, like this is like if you actually look at his BoxRec, you can be a BoxRec fan because most of you are anyway. Go to his BoxRec, and if you actually look at the titles he's fighting for, you'll see they followed the actual like tried and true, tested over decades, the pattern of how you bring a fighter up. There's specific levels where you have to pass. You know,
a proper development plan.
Yeah, he just did every step. He did it one step at a time and didn't do several fights over the course. You know, Teofimo Lopez went from fighting, you know, real, just basically beginner level fights. Then he just basically went to, okay, let's put him in like good club fighter fights. And now he's still fighting those level. And now it's like, okay, let's put him in a contender fight. He gets one contender fight, which is what the Tatil fight was, which he didn't look super phenomenal in that fight. And he was getting hit with a jab. Then you put him in with this fight, which is very similar. Like, this is like, okay, this is very good domestic level fighter. And he's starting to struggle. And it's like, well, yeah, because he's had how much experience fighting against guys like this? He's not going to knock everyone out. Look at his career. He hasn't knocked everyone out so far. So what leads you to believe that he's just going to walk in there and knock guys out? And here's the problem. There's so much TV time. I've made this point in the past where like Teofimo has to get pushed because Top Rank's got to fill these dates and they have to draw interest in these cards. And they could put other guys in this position. They could put, they're putting everyone that they could. You know, Jamel Herring is getting this push. And if they're like, obviously they see like, oh, Teofimo seems to be good. He's charismatic. He's connecting with fans. Well, let's put him in position to have a long success and give him a championship as quick as possible. But the problem is like he's not done. And I don't hold anything against what you're seeing with Teofimo right now. He's 21 years old. This is development. Okay. While they may position it as a title eliminator, you got to know, you got to be smarter than that. Teofimo's not quite there yet. Okay, he won the fight, but he's not going to look phenomenal in this fight. If he fought two more guys like Nakatani, he probably knocks out that third guy. But on his first try, I don't see it happening. The dude is still learning on the job. It's going to take a while. And Lomachenko's a far ways off at this point for him, although not impossible that someday we could see Teofimo Lopez beat him. It's just like, you know, just take it slow. It's cool.
Yeah, I think the reality is you don't want Lomachenko fighting him. You know, Lomachenko's another generation. And it's like, let Lomachenko go out on his era, 33 now or something like that. It's like, but they're going to try to push Teofimo against Lomachenko, and then the dude's going to lose.
For sure.
They're big on those passing the torch kind of situations.
Except Top Rank has never, torch. Like, they have never successfully pulled it off. When was the last time a Top Rank fighter passed the torch?
They keep trying.
It's not because
they never pull it off.
Oscar and Manny, you know, Floyd beat Manny's, or Floyd beat Oscar's ass. Bernard Hopkins beat Oscar's ass. There's no torch passing. These torch passing moments is one of the biggest forearm myths I think I've ever encountered. It's not as boxing. Dude beat your ass. It's not like it's a friendly shakeover. No. You go up against a guy, you know, and he just knocks the shit out of you.
What do you think about the... So, obviously, there was the pretty, you know, tragic stuff that happened in the Dadashev-Matias fight. Dadashev had to have surgery, emergency surgery. He had a part of his skull removed. The prognosis on his recovery, unknown at this time. But, like, what does this say about... I don't want to blame anyone here, okay? But, like, Fred, I've talked with you a little bit about this, and there was that article from The Athletic about the Nevada State Athletic Commission. And, like, the Nevada State Athletic Commission has basically been positioned as the villain over the past year. And, like, you and I have both been critical of them in the way that they handled the Canelo situation with the failed drug test. You and I both think they should have followed the doctor and said, no, that's fine. It's like a super trace amount. However, there was an article in The Athletic where they talked about, like, the Nevada State Athletic Commission is not, like, if you notice, Top Rank's not doing fights in Vegas anymore. So you want to take it over from here?
That's the thing. Like, okay, on one hand, these are things that just happen in boxing. You know, like we saw with Stevenson. Happened is arguable. But on the other hand, like I said, this is, again, because of this backstory that Top Rank, who's based in Las Vegas, can't get cards in Las Vegas because Bob Bennett is thinking that they're trying to make too many lopsided matchups. That's kind of a thing. And you don't really see other people having this problem. Like, you know, Mayweather Promotions, they do this like a monthly card, Sam's Club. Yeah, monthly card club for low-level boxers that they always do at Sam's Club or Sam's Town. This is the big thing is that you take with a grain of salt. Like, I'm not going to directly say this is a result of Top Rank's mismatches. But on the other hand, it's something you keep in the back end. You know, this is it. It's boxing. You know what happens. Again, you know, like Donna Stevenson, you know, thankfully that he seems to be recovering pretty well for as serious a condition he has. He is so old now. You only hope the same thing happens for this guy. But that's something that it sort of flags that Top Rank can't. They're by Nevada, who's usually very proponent friendly.
You know, I want to say, like, the Nevada State Athletic Commission, I'm not the biggest fan of that commission, although they seem to be heading in the right direction. You know, they enforce the Canelo ruling when it seemed to be in the face of common sense, but that's the rules, and they followed it. And when it comes to their matchmaking here, they're saying we are doing the research for these matches that these promoters are trying to put on. And if we see a mismatch that's gross, we're going to say something and we won't approve that fight. And I wonder, like, what is, like, where do they draw the line with prospects and stuff? You know, guys who are inexperienced. But here's the other thing why I bring this up. Do you think that maybe their drug testing is can be trusted? You know, we heard about this fight didn't have VADA testing, the Pacquiao-Thurman fight, and instead the Nevada State Athletic Commission, they provided their own quote-unquote advanced testing. Is it possible that maybe Nevada's just like, hey, we're going to do things the right way, and maybe we don't even need sanctioning bodies at some point?
Well, here's the big mix-up where suddenly VADA and the WBA have disappeared on their fair testing program, same as we've seen with WBC. And no one knows exactly what the results measurement was. You know, so all these auto drug testing, this, they seem very hit or miss about which fights they actually give a shit about we're testing this. At this point with testing, like I said, VADA's nothing special. Like, they don't conduct their own, they don't even do their own.
They just collect the samples. Isn't that it?
Yeah, they do that to the third party. They set up a schedule, test it. That's all they do. It's not like USADA. USADA has their own testers, but everyone's going, whether it's the VADA commissions, VADA, USADA, they're all going to the same labs. One's better than the others. It's all going to the same exact labs who are all, like, once again, even the USADA set up the second Smyrtle lab. You know, they co-founded that with a bunch of other people, like the NFL and everything, but they aren't in control of it because, again, it's got to be like arm's length and everything.
Fred, who is the person?
Secrets.
Who is the guy that you? God, who tested positive and, like, we just haven't heard anything about it.
Jarrell Miller.
Well, no, we heard a lot. He's fighting again.
Yeah, big baby got 6 months from the WBA.
Like that time that WBC suspended Broner for doing his can man.
Yeah, Adrian Broner essentially got a longer suspension than William Monroe did for testing positive for testosterone.
That snack shit ain't even spelt right.
Yeah, you know, so this, again, that's the biggest thing about everyone wanting VADA. Well, now they got two sanctioning bodies where everything's in-house. And even WADA's rules are supposed to be, every fighter is supposed to be licensed. Well, William Monroe didn't have a license, so they couldn't report on the commission. So that's WBC handled everything. Transparent. And I've never seen a single article about it. BA, same thing. Now, if it was USADA handling the Jarrell Miller, he would have gotten 4 years because that's his second failure because he failed when he was a kickboxer. He could have got 2 years for sure if they would have, like said, if he wouldn't have fought, but he'd probably start out with a 4 year suspension, you know, especially for what he tested for. Like, the guy failed like with EPO, HGH, I don't know, whatever the hell.
They didn't even have names, the shit he popped for.
You know, so, but now he'll probably be back and maybe he'll fight Fury, you know, that's it. Because now these sanctioning bodies are taking over the testing. A lot of fighters
are not. Is that a case of the asylum being run by the inmates?
Well, exactly. And that's why it was so funny when all these writers like Hauser, who's personal friends with everyone at WADA, like, I believe the people in WADA have the best intentions. But there's something kind of, you know, they're a bit too inside. You know, all these people have always been, you know, friends with the sanctioning bodies and always getting treated and always getting out there. Like, even John Jones, when when the fight was canceled in Nevada and moved to California, one commission's like, well, you got to sign up for WADA. And then you read about her and she's getting, you know, trips out to Shanghai with the WBC, you know, to talk about boxing expansion. You know, it's like, this stuff shouldn't be going on. Yeah, but they pushed it. So, and now everyone's like, even Max Kellerman's like, USADA can't be trusted. It's like, they're the guys with the least skin in the game. Nothing to do with boxing.
I'm going to agree with you on that one. And to answer the question that Angelo posed is, do I trust state commissions if they were to do the if they were to litigate the testing? I'm going to say yes. I think that a public employee can be put under more scrutiny than a private employee can.
Well,
so there's really no way, there's nowhere for them to sweep something under the rug. And if they do try to sweep something under the rug, there are ways by which we, the public, can find those things out.
Well,
and they're actually going to be held accountable for it. Imagine that, being held accountable for doing something wrong in boxing.
Well, I think also, like, for the state, if something like the Dadashev happens on your watch and say the other fighter tests positive and you're the one like who administered testing, I'm pretty sure that is a much bigger lawsuit than any other situation. And you saw what happened in New York with the Magomed Abdusalamov case, where they paid out, what, $10 million?
Yeah, I think so.
Imagine but if again, there's more responsibility on this that rests with the state. You know, maybe that has them be extra squeaky clean.
I might be a little biased in saying this because I have done work in public organizations. So there, when you're using public funds to perform your function, there's a little bit more scrutiny that goes into it. And there's a lot more being very careful about not crossing any lines of impropriety. And because there is actual repercussions and there are means by which it can be found out. Like, you can't hide that forever. Someone is going to find out if you do something that's, you know, less than, that's not above board in a public org.
Let's move on. Does anybody know if Oscar De La Hoya was sitting ringside for another one of his prospects getting knocked out?
No, he wasn't. Like, you mean the DAZN card from last week?
Correct. Turiano Johnson stopped Jason Quigley in the main event. We're not going to really talk about that, but where's Oscar?
I've been saying this for a long time. Oscar's nowhere to be found. And again, like we've said for a while, and said this is like he's got a problem with Canelo because Canelo has now figured out that he sort of got suckered to support Golden Boy.
He's the only reason that they're still afloat.
100%.
And he figured that out.
Everybody wanted Canelo.
DAZN were the only ones.
Yeah, DAZN was the only ones who were going to pay Oscar for dates, and obviously now other reporters start to figure it out that Canelo is pissed.
You don't know what we're talking about. There's rumors that Canelo hasn't spoken to Oscar for months, and Canelo basically is like very upset with Golden Boy right now because, like, I don't know. I'm making this up. Like, I'm having to read between the lines here, and I think it's a pretty good read. But basically, he understands that that probably makes him mad too. But basically, Golden Boy's got their deal with Dazen because obviously of Canelo, and that's like that's not hard to like figure out. However, money that should be going to his opponents that he wants to fight is not there. Golden Boy is messing around in the negotiations. They're not willing to pay Kovalev what Kovalev wants. And Kovalev looks at what Danny Jacobs made. And he's like, wait a second. You expect me to fight Canelo for $5 million when you guys paid Danny Jacobs $12 million? Like, objectively, the fight with Kovalev is a way bigger deal than Danny Jacobs. And so Golden Boy's like, nah, we're not paying you this money. So Canelo's like, wait a second. I come over here, I don't make as much as I do when I was on pay-per-view, and you guys are not spending money for my opponents?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, the thing is, isn't Daniel Jacobs is paid directly by Dazen, isn't he? He's on his own deal.
The Kovalev thing, USA, yeah.
So Matchroom was paying, is negotiating.
Yeah, so Matchroom may
terms.
Be paying that money, but Kovalev as a third party doesn't have that same kind of deal.
Right, so that might be I could see where that frustration is. Like, I'm an out of house fighter. But why aren't you rolling out the red carpet for me?
Yeah, and I think I talked about that before. Like the finances for DAZN are sort of like they're always like about 9 months behind what they did. But Eddie Hearn's cut was approximately $6 million after fighter expenses and after a split with DAZN. That's a fuck of a lot for a promoter to be making, you know, from September or whenever, you know, however many cards they put on. You know, they only put on a few cards there when the
and they had a very, very little amount of subscribers.
Yeah, exactly. So you know that probably Golden Boy still got the same kind of sweet deal. And so, yeah, Canelo's like, but again, you know, Floyd tried to tell everyone. You know, Manny finally listened. You know, it's that's what they're saying. You got to come to the Heyman because he knows all the tricks. He knows that they're going to screw you.
Didn't Broner try to warn us too? Nobody's getting checks over there.
Oh, you know, there's that too. Yeah.
So with all that said, so I think that somebody tweeted this out, and I think this is a really interesting tweet, which I don't have on hand. So if you're the person who made this tweet, shout out to you. And I think, Fred, you might push back, and Lex, I think you probably will agree with me. I want to hear from Lex first. The tweet was something along the lines of Dazen's kind of pissed off now because, you know, they're struggling to get, like, these fights. But they have themselves to blame because they kind of messed up the market for boxing where – a lot of fights that would have been like a regular Fox fight or regular Showtime fight in the past or ESPN, they're now moving to pay-per-view because that's the only way to compete with or really to make people happy when they look at what Gennady Golovkin's making to fight Steve Rolls and Danny Jacobs is making in his fights. They're like, wait, Dazen's paying all this guaranteed money for fighters that wouldn't normally get that amount. Like, Golovkin probably gets $1 million to fight Steve Rolls on HBO. So that's impacted the pay-per-view market because now we have more. Because it's like, okay, well, in order for us to put on big fights, you guys got to pay for it. So that these guys can make the same things that the Dazen guys are having. Essentially, what they've done is they've, oversaturated the market. Maybe that's not the right word for it. I don't know. I'm not a business guy. Lex, how do you feel about that? Yeah, got it right. Cool.
I mean, that's why I'm very critical of DAZN. They have oversaturated them. You know, like, I think that boxing is very appealing right now because there is an opportunity to make a lot of money, but you also have to know what you're doing. And I don't think that they know what they're doing. They've created a platform that just isn't enticing enough for the American market. You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not really into what they're doing. I don't understand. You know, there's rumors of them trying to get Mikey. I don't think any particular one fighter will help their platform. So it is unfortunate they are oversaturating the market. and it's kind of forcing the other networks to step their game up. And I don't know, it just it, I think it is what it is. And I personally hope it doesn't.
I was under the impression that Al Heyman ruined the market. That's what I was led to believe, that Heyman ruined everything. Heyman ruined boxing. He also ruined your marriage, and he ruined your kids' grades.
Well, I mean, I want to say that I'm not saying that this is a bad thing. So if you think like, oh, you know, Lex was a little more critical, I'm not going to go that far. I'm not saying that this is a bad thing. Okay, so if you're like, oh, why are you guys so critical of Dazen? I'm not even being critical. I'm just saying this is the cost of doing business. By them giving out high prices, it's made everyone else have to elevate their game. And the only way for certain fights to happen now is for them to be on pay-per-view. And while those pay-per-views, you don't have to order them, they won't be as successful as, say, a Floyd Mayweather pay-per-view. It's still enough to basically be equal or even more than what you could get on that guaranteed money. Fred, I'm guessing you have a retort.
Yeah, well, okay, so the main thing is you can never pay a boxer too much money, but outlets can spend too much money. You know, like, I'm never going to say you overpay a boxer, because a boxer's whole entire purpose is to make as much money as he possibly can.
Look at Dadashev. Is there a figure you can put on what he's basically suffered, you know?
Or all these guys. These guys, you know, they're always risking their life. So whatever money they get is what they get. You know, there's no, if you could take it from a promoter, outlet, who cares? These are rich outlets. They'll always, you know, they'll be able to make more money. As an athlete, especially a boxer, you've got a finite, you know, period of time to make your earnings and hopefully get out, you know, in good health. The thing with Canelo is that they can hold dates, but now they just open up the pay-per-view market. So now you can get Manny Pacquiao fight. You can get Spence on your fighting twice in a year in pay-per-view, because there's not the big pay-per-view draw now. And we talked about this before. It's like DAZN tried to just take HBO's formula, where HBO said we can't compete anymore with the exact same fighters. HBO was in the business for, what, 30, 40 years. And DAZN's like, we're coming in, and people are like, yeah, they can spend whatever they want because they got the big, huge backing. Well, we're not even in 9 months of full operation, and they're almost tapping out. You know, they just lost Canelo, and no one knows what's going on there. You know, they gave $15 million. Like I said, the only persons, they went from a point saying, we're not going to announce any numbers. Canelo made these numbers or whatever. But then again, it's like 600,000, 700,000 peak in the U.S., well, that's less. And we've said this for years and years and years on the forum. Price of pay-per-view, all you're doing is screwing yourself. Because they pay-per-view and promoters only care about the people who pay money. Well, everybody who thinks you're getting over on them because they're pirating, they care about the people that show up, the people who want to pay for the entertainment. So when now DAZN try to say, we'll give it to you for $20. Well, you know, that's what you got. Got Canelo is your big draw, and now they're all, no one knows exactly why Canelo wasn't fighting, except that you took him off the biggest weekend of this is so like the whole of the year. You know, that's the Mexican date, and that's Canelo's big date. And again, it's like this whole thing, is it Oscar? Is it DAZN? No one knows, but it looks horrible, and it is like, this is what you get. AJ got knocked out. They're fighting. Like, does DAZN really want to do a fight and pay AJ money for him to fight in the UK, where he's going to get no US exposure? You know, it's like, I know, like, the UK fans, really, they are a lot of good people, even though I goof on UK a lot. Those guys that stay up to like 4 a.m. to watch a fight live in the US, you know, that's some dedication. But the US people, they don't even care, and it's only on like at noon. You know, they just don't give a shit about that. It's like, we'll make a lot of fun of DAZN. One was, so this is the way it's got to be. And it's like, we've just saw HBO tap out with the exact same lineup. Okay, like, just like Superflies, and these guys, these writers on Twitter went, this is what Superflies, what you need. No one's showing up to these fucking Superfly fights. You know, we saw, like, which I thought that last DAZN card from Golden Boy was a really good card, except for the main event, which is kind of boring. Stands, you know, Oscar's MIA. Guy said, I want to come back.
Happy, you know, about that, by the way.
The same thing. But we knew this from Stephen Espinoza saying that he's not happy because Oscar's there part-time. This is why Richard Schaefer had to take over. Sort of flighty. This is the way Oscar's always been. Even before his drug problems, Oscar's always been very flighty. He gets really enthused, and then he changes his mind. You know, that's the way he's always been. So to put all his weight on Oscar carrying your promotion.
I think there's something in what you said. There's a lot of, I found it resonated a lot with me, where you said this is the same way that HBO looked. And it's something that made me think of something Steven Espinoza said on his Reddit AMA, where he said, oh, our competitors, he didn't name names, they try to acquire individual talent, which this shopping, this will he, won't he sign with Dazen of Mikey Garcia is reminiscent of exactly that. They're not, Showtime and now Fox PBC, they've put their efforts into acquiring the talent of divisions and building up the talent together, like rising tides raise all ships. Whereas HBO and now Dazen, they picked up Canelo. What options, what opponents do they really have for him? Daniel Jacobs. Then what? A trilogy with Golovkin, I guess? Then they got AJ. Who did they have for AJ to fight? They picked up Ruiz, and look how that went. And now what do they have left?
Yeah, like, I think the Ruiz was like a last moment. People were trying to sell that, oh, this is the best thing that happened to the zone. But they were making a fight with Jarrell Miller. No one gives a shit about.
Yeah, that was supposed to be a showcase, wasn't it? Like, they just pulled up a chubby kid who might look all right, and then AJ's just going to blow him out.
Yeah.
See, this is my – I'm sorry, guys. What you guys are talking about right now is my big issue. Like, we have all these writers who are like, World Boxing Super Miller versus AJ. No one in America cares about any of this. You can write until your hands have carpal tunnel syndrome. No amount of articles. No amount of articles.
Sorry, I just started up 6-4. Keep going.
Sorry. No amount of articles will force people to subscribe to DAZN, no matter how hard people try. And it's like, it wasn't a good idea when they started, and it's still not a good idea. And I keep bringing up Mikey because he's the newest person to go there. And it's like, you're going.
He's not going there. They're just talks.
They're saying he may go there. And it's like, you get millions of dollars to what? Tank your career. Nobody's asking about Daniel Jacobs. Nobody's asking about Triple G. Nobody's asking about Canelo inside with the exception of like the hardcore fan base, which is like, who cares? And look at what Fox just did with the pay-per-view last night. Mikey Garcia was on the Fox Deportes telecast. Deontay's on it. Sean is on it. You have all these guys that's got this huge platform, and you're giving these guys the opportunity to grow. On DAZN, it's the opposite of growing. You're killing your what? It's so stupid. I cannot stand it.
Yeah, like I might be horribly biased, but I'll annoy it. But Fox, especially with PBC, because like Showtime's playing it cool because that's what Espinoza always does it. You know, like they just worry about
they what got they can handle. They not got really the number one show on premium cable now. Now that Game of Thrones is out, now it's billions. So they're cool.
Exactly. There you go. But Espinoza plays it cool. But that's it on Fox. It's like they give B-sides attention, you know?
Well, I want to say this.
On the pay-per-view, they had Caleb Plant, but then they bring in Benavidez, you know? So it's like everyone's getting a piece. It's not just like – and you could see it. Like I said, again, people might complain about the commentary, but like I said, when I tune in to watch a boxing card, laughing and having fun, I think that's the best thing ever. Everyone's having fun.
Need just what the sport, watching the sport is supposed to be about. That's what being a spectator is.
Yeah, I don't need Mark Kriegel hoping that someone gets shot so he can do like a 2-hour expose on him. You know, well, these guys are having fun. They all know the risks. And like again, I said it before, I don't mean to go on too much, but to be the guy sitting here always preaching about fighter safety, and he's not. He's like, you guys get in there and you got to beat ass. You know, and that's he's a fighter, and that's why it's great.
I think in the terms of like the business model, between the difference between HBO and like what PBC or what Fox is doing, because it's not even PBC. This, we're talking about Fox. It's not PBC. Fox is in control of the production, and Showtime's not doing this, so it's clearly not PBC. But in terms of the differences between Fox, HBO, DAZN, and ESPN, it seems like what the model HBO had was like they knew that if they had one or two superstars, they were good. They treated boxing like a little vanity product or project where, yeah, we have one thing that is successful and generates a lot of interest and revenue and blah, blah, blah. And it allows us, it gives us the money to be able to put on these other shows that we like and we see as, you know, premium content. And while they're not appreciated by the masses, in general, we like this kind of product on our platform. And so they didn't do so much promotion of the other guys because they said, well, we have Floyd and we have Oscar and we have Pacquiao and we have Miguel Cotto. Like, we don't really need to promote these other guys. You know, just go look at, 2011 HBO, who was fighting on the broadcast. Like, we don't need to promote Tavoris Cloud, you know? People who like boxing will watch, and if not, then they don't have to. They didn't do a 24/7 on anything that wasn't a pay-per-view because they weren't in the business of spending a lot of money to promote the lower-level cards. Well, that's not what Fox is doing. Fox is treating boxing like they're trying to make all of it work. They don't have that perspective of there's only one guy we need to grow here, and if we grow that one guy, then we make enough money for at the end of the year so that we're in the black. They're treating every fight like it's a pay-per-view almost. And that's been the major difference, I think, in terms of the promotion that Fox has done for PBC. And I think, it's not like they've invented this. I think this is pretty similar to what they were probably doing with the UFC. The only difference is Fox is maybe a little more invested now because they get a cut of the pay-per-view that they weren't before. But
yeah, and they get a say in the fights and everything. The thing is that I see this a lot too. People go if a fighter loses, they think he's supposed to be the PBC fight. You know, Al Haymon is trying to fix it for these. Most of these guys, is it Luis Ortiz as a promoter? Have promoters. Most of these PBC guys don't have promoters. So, and this is their model is if you lose. Like, people thought Uzkadagai was going to be the showcase fight. No, Caleb Plant wins, so they're all in with Caleb Plant. It's like whoever wins, that's who we're going to push. They're not sitting there being petty because they don't care. They're pushing the product. They're pushing boxing.
As long as they're part of the brand, that's who we're pushing.
Yeah, like Omar Figueroa, him and John Molina had a good fight. Well, they were supposed to both get spots on this pay-per-view because people go, oh, that fight was good. You know, it was a good slugfest between two guys.
They're going to push those two. Like, hey, remember these guys? We got both of them.
Yeah, Ugas got a spotlight because, you know, he had a close fight with Porter. You know, they don't care about, well, our A side is supposed to win. No, they don't care. It's like everyone's in it.
Isn't
and that's why
the
everyone's
mistake
getting
that,
paid.
That Oscar De La Hoya made with his entire company. Like, he put all his eggs in the Canelo basket, and he, at the same time, he's also screwing the basket over, and now he's mad that it's not carrying anything anymore.
Yeah. I was thinking of this sort of what you see with the Zone and what HBO became is what Showtime used to be when they spent all their money on Tyson. You know, like they're paying so much for Tyson that they really didn't have much of other products. And that's where HBO really eclipsed them.
And that's where Showtime had to show all the lighter weight classes.
Yeah.
Cheaper fights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go back to 2008. And you'll see Showtime basically was like showing Brandon Rios fights, like early Brandon Rios fights. They were showing a lot of lighter weight classes. Like if you really look at it, it's like go back to 2008. Just look at the – I mean I could actually send it to you. But look at the fights that were on Showtime. And it's like, wow, this was like their main event was a Pauly Malignaggi fight against –
Abner Maris said in his AMA, he's like that – being on Showtime was like that was where he got his start.
Yeah, and they did a Super 6 in the bantamweight division. Abner Maris became one of the biggest villains in boxing because he low blowed his way to a win. But that's neither here nor there.
I'll let him know that next time I see him.
Anyway, Alexander Vozdik and Archer Beterbiev, they are signed to unify their light heavyweight titles. I think this is kind of a weird one because, like, it's a good fight for sure. You have two guys unifying. I think it's a great fight. I think the match of styles is going to be really interesting to watch. It should be, a good fight. However, I feel like ESPN is kind of, and Top Rank, is kind of rushing this one because I don't think that they need to do this fight. Like, Vozdik and Beterbiev, neither of them is super popular at this point in time. And, like, if they fought tune-up fights, I don't think anyone would care. So why not go that route and let these guys grow a little bit? And, hey, if Gilberto Ramirez has a few successful fights at light heavyweight, it brings more interest into the division because people want to see who are the guys that Ramirez is going to fight. You could say, like, oh, these guys are ducking Ramirez. They don't want to give him a title shot. You know, fabricate some story. Who cares? Nobody's going to really check if that's the case or not. And then you have these guys fight where, you know, this fight doesn't, like, I don't think this fight does more than, like, 700,000 viewers, which is pretty low given it's a unification fight. I mean, what do you guys think?
I don't know. No, I think you're perfectly right. And this sort of ties once again, like we talked about, where ESPN's got this UFC mentality where every fight has to be a title fight.
I think they get... Top Rank gets paid more if they're putting on title fights.
Yeah, then that's what they're trying to push. You know, that fight with Stevenson, what was it on? Showtime?
Correct. Something?
Yeah, so it's like now you're bringing this guy in for this thing. And although some people think that Beterbiev is the greatest fighter in the history of the sport, Brian Beterbiev beat everyone. But otherwise, he's been spotty, like, he's had one fight or two fights maybe since he came back.
Are you trying to make a case that better, like, these guys are going to lose before they can actually have a unification fight?
No, I'm just saying the fact that you're right, that they should build these guys up on their platform, but they don't. It's all, again, just like Teofimo. He's like, we got to rush these guys. We got to rush. And that's the one, again, everyone, DAZN, ESPN, to me, seems like they're rushing everything. Like, we want to build. They seem to be in it for the future, and everyone else seems they're trying to get the money back right now. You know, and that's the read I see on these, when you see them rushing these fights.
Yeah, I don't think that, like, this is not a money fight, and, like, it's a money fight in terms of quality. These are two very good fighters fighting each other. However, like, where do they put this fight where it draws? Is there a place
where it better be from?
Beterbiev is from, well, Montreal. If they put it in Montreal, then maybe. Beterbiev does a little bit of drawing over there. Vozdik fought Stevenson there. I think that's a really strong market.
Yeah, I think Quebec is a good place to put it.
I mean, but this might end up being at, like, the MSG Theater. And think about this. This is a unification fight in the light heavyweight division.
This is supposed to be the big coup of ESPN, is that they locked up almost every single 175-pound. A fighter.
But it seems like they're hot-shotting it.
And now you've got Kovalev going to fight Yard in Russia?
Yeah. And?
How does that make sense?
Hey, ESPN Plus, man. You can air that fight whenever you want.
Yeah, streaming, just like Manny versus Matisse. You know, everyone was tuning into that one.
So we can move on. Mikey is in advanced talks, quote-unquote, with DAZN. What percent chance do you give Mikey actually signing with DAZN? What do you think, Lex?
To be honest, I mean, Mikey strikes me as someone who isn't too tied down to any particular network. So if he ended up there, it wouldn't shock me. I mean, I could see Eddie Hearn throwing him a ridiculous amount of money. I don't think it'd be a wise idea. I don't think DAZN doesn't really have any, like, really strong candidates to 140, right?
I don't think they have any candidates to justify paying what they're going to wind up paying him.
Right. So it's either Mikey's going to go there, lose a lot of momentum, and get paid to be stuck on an app where no one, or he stays on Fox, or even goes to ESPN. So I don't know, a percent, 50-50.
What do you think, Leo? Sorry. Go on.
I think,
or not.
As much as I like Mikey, I want to say, I think that he's going to end up signing there because he's going to see, he's going to get the sticker shock in a good way when he sees how much he's going to be getting paid guaranteed per fight. And that's going to make him commit, despite the fact that he's not, he's going to be mad about it later. But I mean, he's going to be real upset, wiping his tears of anger with $1,000 bills. He's not good. When I say he's going to be upset, is that he's going to lose his momentum. Like, as Lex said, there's really nobody for him to fight over there. So it's going to be like Terrence Crawford's situation. He's going to lose a lot of respect because there's a lot of respect and adoration of the fans, because there's really not much for him to do except beat up on nobodies and get paid for it, which I guess if that's what he wants to do, then, you know, more power to him.
What do you think, Fred?
Yeah, I'd go it's 50-50, because the thing with Mikey is that he likes to talk to all these guys and just to see what they think his value is. If he's going to fully commit or if he's just always checking his market value, you know, because then he can always play that against everyone. Because like he's still, you know, he's Mikey Garcia, he's still a hot commodity. He's done very well since coming back from the Top Rank lawsuit. And then it's like, well, if they're going to
dump he's not looking for a new job, but he's just interviewing around. He's just looking to see what he's worth.
Hopefully, just like, you know, when Floyd was courting him, you know, like, yeah, sure, you'll go to Vegas, hang out with Floyd, see what he has to say. But that's it. He's listening. He's always, you know, Mike is very smart.
You know? Hey, Shakur Stevenson was doing the same thing. He did it with Arum, Golden Boy, and with Mayweather. They were whining and dining him.
Yeah, so he might be, and especially because, you know, if Mikey's got his own fighters, he's like, well, you know, if they're going to pay Oscar this money, at least I show up to the fights.
He might have been talking to John Skipper, like, yo, you gonna let me bring my boys along or what?
I'd see that on that kind of deal. So you don't know what Mikey's going to do. But again, like as everyone said, it's like, well, what's he going to do there? But I don't know. Tevin Farmer seems pretty happy. He has a run beating up a bunch of Europeans.
I think he fights this weekend.
Yeah, exactly. He's content just beating up dudes. They have no chance against him.
I mean, I think that there's a good chance that they actually sign him. But the thing about Mikey is I think he just likes being in this position where he feels like he's being pursued. Like, if you think about Mikey and the way he perceives himself, he sees himself as like a pay-per-view draw. It's why he wanted to leave Top Rank, because he felt like they weren't treating him the way they should have been treating him, which is like, I can be the top draw in boxing and I want to be treated as such. Now, you may disagree with that, and I am in agreement. I mean, I've been up here making the case that Mikey will never be a star. I was proven wrong with the Spence pay-per-view. I didn't think it would be as successful as it was. But the reality is I still feel that way. I feel like, and especially coming off the loss to Spence, Mikey's lost a lot of momentum. And maybe, so we talk a lot about gambling on yourself. And Deontay Wilder has done that this year where he said, I'm not going to go sign no guaranteed deal. I'm going to keep betting on myself. And at this point, Mikey's finally seen his mortality. He saw it in the fight with Spence and realized, oh, I have a limit. That undefeated fighter aura is gone. And now he may think, like, do I really want to keep scratching and clawing and killing myself to make weight to try to make as much, like, you know, these big paydays? Or should I take something that's a little more modest, but I know that at the end of the day, I still get my money? I think that's why Mikey is entertaining these offers. Because if he's not willing to gamble anymore, well, then this is the best thing that you can do.
Yeah. When he came back and signed with, did he sign with Ringstar? Or did he just go straight to PBC?
Nah, it was, yes, he did, but he was working.
He was working closely with, as he returned with PBC. So at that time, though, he was talking a lot about making up for lost time. And, you know, I was out of the ring for 2 years. I got to make up for it with quick runs, big fights and all that. And then, as you said, he saw his own mortality. And it's like, well, the inevitable road is that I do move up to this level of fighting or this level of opponent, and I don't want to keep doing that. So let me go see how much money Dazen's going to pay me. Let's see if they're going to let me bring my stable of fighters, however big or small it might be. You know, let me see if I could bring them along with me.
And Mikey, he has an eye on the door, like, to get out of boxing. So if they throw enough money his way, he'll finish it out there. Because he knows, like, it's just his brother. Like, he can go be a trainer, help his brother, and they could build that, you know, their family whole stable up.
Yeah, that, like, that whole Oxnard area can become something more than just, you know, fighters who train out there.
Here's I just wanted to say, like, funny thing about this, right? I think this will be a really stupid. As much as I dislike them, I'm being objective. Signing Mikey for a big sum of money will not help them.
It's not going to help Dazen, no, but it's good for Mikey.
Mikey.
It's good for him.
No,
not going to move the needle. No, he's not going to move the needle for them.
Right, and that's my point. I just mean, like, it'll be great for Mikey to get that money, but, like, I don't that's all it's good for. For the sake of, like, boxing storylines, the 140 narrative, the 135 narrative, the 147 narrative, it doesn't do anything. So I don't know.
I'm going to quote Dr. Dre, never get mad to see young blacks get money.
Okay.
That's the Heyman model. I'm not going to be mad if Mikey signs with a network or an entity that's not, it's kind of takes him out of the running of the important parts, the important tracks or the most impactful tracks of fighting. What's the problem? The Heyman mentality was for the fighters to get paid what they deserve, because they're the ones that are doing all the work, really. So if that means going to Dazen, where I want him to be happy, even if that means that he's happy doing off there doing essentially nothing. But if that's what's good for him and his life, then hey, more power to him.
All right, moving on. Do you guys think Bob Arum is interested in promoting a third fight between Rob Brandt and Ryota Murata?
Why only three? Why stop at three? Let's get a fourth and a fifth in there too. Brandt Murata is a fucking choice. That's a series for the ages.
I'd love to be in Top Rank's offices when he got that.
when Rob Brandt was like, "I'm enforcing my rematch clause," they're like, what?" Richard Schaefer, Nonito Donaire, they talked to some press people this week, and they're like, you know what? We think we're pulling out of the World Boxing Super Series. And if you're like, wait, why? Well, they said that they've basically been ghosted by the World Boxing Super Series people, and that they've been waiting around for months for a fight. And, like, they have not said anything to them about when Donaire might be fighting next. You know, there's obviously rumors, but they have not been told anything. So they're like, and you think about it, like, Nonito Donaire is, like, old now, and he's fighting at 118. He doesn't have much more time to be sitting around and waiting. So it's possible that he just dips out. It's like, you know, I'm not going to sit around and wait. And especially, I'm not going to sit around and wait 8 months for you to tell me I'm going to fight Inoue and get stomped out in a couple of rounds. That's not a recipe for success, especially given Donaire's got a little bit of popularity. Certainly, he's probably the most popular guy fighting under 126 pounds. I think that's pretty fair to say. So what do you guys think about this? Is it a good move? What do you think is going on with the World Boxing Super Series?
I think it's dead.
Dead?
It had a good run. It had a decent run. It had the cruiserweight series, and that's about it.
Fred?
The first year they lucked into Usyk joining it, because remember, he wasn't initially part of it.
Yeah, we tried to start a rumor that Wilder was going to move down for it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so Usyk joining up, because you know the way they set out their tournaments, they have their two favorites that are completely not anywhere close to each other when they're making the, you know, the matchups and everything. And so Usyk threw the sort of, you know, and their works on that one, and it turned out good for him, but it's not like they were making big returns. And then this year has been really terrible. Like, Regis Progray's out there, you know, fighting in front of 500 people.
It wasn't even that.
I think it was at least 1,000.
I don't know about that.
Maybe not even that. But see, that's what's funny. And they're like, well, see, you know, after this, they might have a good chance to sign him. It's like, really? Like, he's friends, like, is it a four? He's friends with the Charlos and Spence. There's no way that Pro Gray is going to say, yeah, I'm going to keep going with the guys who have been sitting there and making me promote my fights.
Which he's done a bad job.
Yeah, and like I said, again, this is another thing that Espinoza said about this when he was asked about this. He said, well, you don't get big names in tournaments because these guys have options. Brown and Waite. So especially now with Schaefer, like Schaefer is supposed to be one of the key players in this, you know, and now he can't even get an answer out of these guys because this is what you get in boxing. You know, so we're going to.
Should we be looking for where the Sauerland bros are?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, who knows? This is what you get. Like, this is why Bob Arum always talked about when people said, well, are they going to have this huge fight in Saudi Arabia? They want to pay Manny $100 million. He's like, get the fuck out of here. You know, everyone wants to talk big, and they don't show up. And that's what sort of happened to WBSS. These guys thought they were going to corner something, and they're going to get this big reaction, and it's not. You know, maybe some of them got a little pinched by some Russian sanctions or something. You get, like, especially Donaire, that now he's got a sort of second life. He's not going to stick around. Because especially now he might be able to get a fight where he can get some heat and make some money. It's weird because first place is supposed to be about $10 million or something. So no one even knows that that money's still coming through.
Has anybody seen Sauerland's face? Maybe that's where the money went.
So
it's a mess.
Let's move on. I mean, really, The thing about this is, like, the World Boxing Super Series is a great concept in terms of, like, you know, pie in the sky. But, like, the money was never locked up. You just saw what happened to Matias. Like, look, boxers are not stupid. They're not trying to get in there and risk their lives and not get paid. So let's move on. Gervonta Davis will be fighting Ricardo Nunez on Showtime this week. You guys have any thoughts on this fight? I mean, Ricardo Nunez, like, you know, this guy's not super popular. Like, you know, any thoughts?
Hopefully it goes longer than the first.
No, I mean, I don't have any thoughts. Another showcase fight for Tank. I think the world is ready for him to, like, take that next step of, like, all right, enough showcases get you in there with, like, a Gary Russell Jr., Leo, Tevin, even though he's stuck on the zone.
Hey, don't be putting me in there with him. He's going to take my head off.
Right. So, hopefully it goes longer than one. Get a couple rounds of Tank looking good at the crib, and then move on to bigger and better things.
Fred, what do you think about Gervonta's fight? Have you done any research on Ricardo Nunez?
Oh, yeah. I've been studying fight films for hours.
What do you guys think about... Oh, go on.
It's trying to build up Gervonta into, like, this is his hometown fight, you know. Everyone has sort of the opinion that Gervonta might be a bit bigger than he is as far as appeal. He's had his hiccups where, like, he didn't really feel like training and stuff like that. And so now they're trying to rebuild him. And so that's what you get. No good fight. No beat a dude's ass. Why not? He's still 24. And he's got a ways to go. But that's it. You know, like Leo Santa Cruz talked about, like, yeah, I want to make the fight right away. He's like, well, follow through then. I'll tune in for that one for sure.
Well, for sure. I think Gervonta Davis and Leo Santa Cruz would be a great fight. But I don't think Leo Santa Cruz has much of a chance against...
Where is Leo?
Leo's trying to get that September fight. Man. He wants the...
He wants to fill the September seat?
Yeah, he does. Now, how is that going to go? Probably not well. On the undercard,
of course, because of the Mexican champion, Golovkin's going to get that date.
Oh, yeah, it's Mexican style only, versus, right?
Roman Martinez. That will be on the undercard. Just trying to get through this, guys. I think we should probably start wrapping this up. Ladarius Miller versus Jezreel Corrales. Ronald Gavril makes his return. You may remember him losing to David Benavidez. And then that card will go head-to-head with the Jose Ramirez versus Maurice Hooker unification fight. Pretty solid fight here. And I think, like, look, most of the time when you have a unification, it's an A fighter versus an A fighter. And that's what makes them so special. But that's not really what we're seeing in this fight. I think both Hooker and Ramirez have revealed themselves to be around a B-level fighter. And they're still good guys. They're still good fighters. But, like, you look at Josh Taylor, you look at Regis Progre, and it's like, I don't think these two guys are that good. Now, certainly they could get to that point, but Jose Ramirez has already been in close fights. Maurice Hooker arguably had what you could consider a robbery in his fight with Darlys Perez on the Andre Ward-Sergey Kovalev undercard. you know, Maurice Hooker, you know, not, you know, there's question marks about these two guys, but it should be interesting. Maurice Hooker, super tall. Jose Ramirez, he's an all action fighter. It should be a very interesting fight. So, anything you guys want to say about that card?
See, they're hoping that Ramirez's fan base travels. They're going to Arlington, yeah.
But they won't. I don't think that they would. They're going to travel all the way to Texas. Like, he's got a little regional. Well, it's not a little regional following, but it's a regional following.
Yeah, that's what's weird. This is the DAZN card, right? Is that who it's going to be heard on?
Yes.
Yeah, because that just seems like a dumbass decision. Because Ramirez brings in 12,000 in LA, so even though Hooker's the DAZN guy, it's like, come on. You want to see a fight where there's people in the stands for once.
All right. Thanks, guys, for coming on the podcast. It's been real fun this week. Lex, Leo, you guys don't often come on, so I hope you guys enjoyed yourselves. Leo, I know you enjoyed yourself at that Pacquiao fight. That looked...
it was a blast.
Yep. So yeah, rate, follow, subscribe, review if you enjoyed the podcast. We are on social media. You can find us there. Otherwise, I appreciate you guys listening. We will be back next week.